Welcome back, everybody. I'm Rick Pettigrew. From this past week of Archaeologica, we feature four new and amazing stories. Send us feedback on the Archaeology Channel Facebook page or post a message on our social networking site, ArchaeoSeek. Skeletal remains from a horse cemetery in London are telling researchers, among other things, where the horses used in medieval jousting tournaments actually came from. A new study combining several sources of data suggests that the Iranian plateau was a key stopover as modern humans left Africa and began spreading to other continents. Human remains from coastal Peru document an important period of crisis and violence at the time when the Chavín culture collapsed. And an island off the Australian coast serves as a time capsule for archaeologists and native Australians exploring tens of thousands of years of Aboriginal use. Thanks to everyone for supporting our subscription platform, Heritage Broadcasting Service, available at heritagetac.org. We now have hundreds of titles you can binge upon on Roku. Please help us spread the word. Again, that link is heritagetac.org. Our tour program, TAC Tours, will continue in 2024 with our tour of the many eye-catching civilizations spanning thousands of years in northern Peru. Plenty of space remains for this one. The link to our tour program is at archaeologychannel.org/tours. And now, here's Laura Kennedy with the audio news from Archaeologica. We hope you find this to be a valuable part of your day.
Welcome to the audio news from Archaeologica. I'm Laura Kennedy, and these are the headlines in archaeological and historical news for the week of March 24th through the 30th, 2024. We begin this week in a horse cemetery in Westminster, London. A new study of the remains reveals the international horse trading practices in the Middle Ages were an extremely important part of daily life. As reported by Heritage Daily in a story based on a report in the journal Science, historical records show how royalty and high-ranking elites expended great effort in procuring, breeding, and training the best horses. Now, scientific techniques such as carbon isotope analysis offer information about the likely origins, diet, and travel patterns of these elite horses during their first 5 years of life. According to Dr. Alex Pryor, senior lecturer in archaeology and lead researcher at the University of Exeter, the chemical signatures on the horse's teeth were very different from those of horses reared in the United Kingdom. This provides solid evidence that Middle Ages trading practices involved fine horses. Representatives for London's elite searched European trading markets for the highest quality horses. Most likely, those horses were used in jousting competitions held in Westminster. Researchers used 22 molar teeth from 15 individual horses buried in the cemetery under Elverton Street, which was excavated back in the 1990s prior to construction. They drilled out a sample of enamel for isotope analysis. This allowed for identification of where the horses did and did not originate. Half of the horses originated from Scandinavia, the Alps, and other northern and eastern European locations. This coincides with the breeding patterns of royal stud farms of the day. Somewhat surprisingly, the researchers found no evidence linking the horses to well-known horse breeding locales such as Spain and southern Italy. Teeth analysis revealed heavy pattern wear consistent with a curb bit, which was commonly used after the 14th century on elite animals in jousting tournaments and war. Two of the mares displayed bit wear, suggesting they were ridden or harnessed. Skeletal analysis reveals that many of the horses were above average in size. Fused lower thoracic and lumbar vertebrae demonstrate a life of riding and hard work. Horses were as important to medieval life as cars are now. This explains why London elites invested so much effort and time into finding the highest quality horses. Our second story takes us to the Iranian plateau, where early modern humans likely settled before spreading out to Eurasia, Europe, and Oceania. The evidence suggests that the populating of Eurasia was not a simple process. As reported by phys.org, the study uses a multidisciplinary approach and model to explain where human ancestors migrated after leaving Africa. Different research has suggested that humans didn't achieve stable colonization in Eurasia until 45,000 years ago, despite leaving Africa 60,000 to 70,000 years ago. This is a significant time gap in the record. According to Leonardo Vallini from the University of Padua, Italy, approximately 20,000 years after leaving Africa, modern humans engaged in admixture with Neanderthals, meaning the mixing of previously isolated populations. The research included genetic research and paleoecological modeling. This helped to unravel 40,000 years of admixture to determine that these ancestors settled as a hub population before moving on to Eurasia and other areas of the world. The research suggests they may have settled in the Iranian plateau because it was an environment ideally suited for a large population. The result of the admixture was the identifiable population that later settled throughout much of the world. This research also suggests that during this time, these people were adapting and preparing for the challenges they would face in moving into these different regions. Archaeological evidence has revealed earlier human migrations to Europe. However, these early expansions don't appear to have endured, as they left no significant genetic contribution to our current populations. According to Professor Michael Petraglia, co-study author and director of Griffith University's Australian Research Centre for Human Evolution, this study provides much insight into the migration out of Africa and into Eurasia. It also emphasizes the significance of the Iranian plateau in shaping early human settlement. This study is published in the journal Nature Communications. Our third story takes us to the central Andes in Peru, where researchers have found skeletal evidence of political upheaval and violent infighting. The violence was possibly associated with a shift from a theocracy to a secular government. As reported by Phys.org, bioarchaeologist Luis Pezo Lanfranco led a team of Peruvian, Colombian, and Brazilian researchers. They conducted a detailed study of 67 individuals excavated from a burial ground in the Supe Valley region, dating from 500 to 400 BC. The site is a few kilometers from Caral, a well-known ceremonial center in action between 2900 and 1800 BC, which our tour group will visit in 2024. The site is a few kilometers from Caral, a well-known ceremonial center in action between 2900 and 1800 BC, which our tour group will visit in October 2024. The researchers detected injuries that matched patterns of repeated interpersonal violence. 80% of the adults and adolescents examined died from traumatic perimortem injuries or injuries that occurred near the time of death. Pezo Lanfranco and his team hypothesized that a group of outsiders committed the murders, involving injuries to the skull, face, and chest. The burial patterns suggest that community survivors of the attack buried their people with the typical funeral rites. The team also found examples of antemortem trauma, or trauma before death. Some individuals displayed both perimortem and antemortem injuries, which indicates multiple violent events during their lives. Among the most common injuries were those to the forearms, which suggest that the victims were trying to defend themselves. The study shows that these individuals experienced difficult living conditions. Skeletal analysis revealed high incidences of general stresses and infectious diseases. This may have been caused by population growth and shortages of resources. These shortages are indicated by the simplicity of the grave goods. The Chavín culture ruled over much of Peru from 1200 to 500 BC. At its center was the ceremonial site of Chavín de Huántar, located in the Marañón River basin, where people worshipped a deity resembling a man-jaguar. The Chavín culture started collapsing around 500 to 400 BC, probably because of competition over insufficient resources. The researchers speculate that the lack of resources led to the disintegration of the belief system, which caused political upheaval and infighting. This study is published in the journal Latin American Antiquity. Our final story this week takes us 60 kilometers off the large, dry, thinly populated Pilbara region of northwestern Australia to Barrow Island. The island was once a hill overlooking Australia's now submerged coastal shelf. As reported by Phys.org, a new study published in the journal Quaternary Science Reviews reveals that Aboriginal people often lived in areas of this now submerged plateau. It's likely that habitation started 50,000 years ago and ended 6,500 years ago as the island was separated from the mainland by rising sea levels. Researchers are collaborating with the coastal Fulani-Ji traditional owners on the island and on the mainland. This research is very significant and reveals how the First Nations people lived before and during the last ice age. The last ice age saw global sea levels 130 meters below current levels. Afterward, the melting ice raised the sea level, separating Barrow Island from the mainland. The cave and open-air sites on Barrow Island reveal much about the Aboriginal ways of life over thousands of years. 3 years of field research at almost 50 open-air locations revealed over 4,000 flaked and ground stone artifacts. Most of the stone used for the tools was not native to the island. Instead, the stone was more frequently found in the mainland's West Pilbara and Ashburton regions. These artifacts illustrate how Aboriginal people traded and moved materials for over 43,000 years, from inland or places now underwater. The open sites also display how native Australians adapted when rising sea levels cut off access to resources in flooded areas. Surface and cave records indicate that they began using more local limestone and shell tools until finally abandoning the island when it became separated from the mainland. Until then, the island people still traded and maintained social networks with the mainland, where their descendants live today. The open sites of Barrow Island, in a way, then, connect today's Aboriginal people to coastal areas now underwater. The traditional owners and scientists conducting this project see this as a wonderful opportunity to understand and preserve more of Australia's diverse history. That wraps up the news for this week. For more stories and daily news updates, visit Archaeologica on the World Wide Web at archaeologica.org, where all the news is history. Also, check out our growing subscription platform, Heritage Broadcasting Service, at heritagetac.org. I'm Laura Kennedy, and I'll see you next week.
This has been the audio news from Archaeologica, presented by the Archaeology Channel. Be sure to check back with us next week for our next edition. You can spread the word about the audio news by clicking on the Share This link on our audio news webpage, or just by telling your friends. Thanks very much for stopping by.